You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
And welcome to this week's edition of The Mountain Gardener. This is your host, Ken Lane, talking about the outdoors, the landscapes of northern Arizona. And we are, spring is here. You're seeing, this week I saw the wild cherries have bloomed. So you're seeing a tree out in the field or next to us in the chaparral in the scrub with pinyon pines and ponderosas. It's got this beautiful pale pink to white flower in bloom. It's related to the purple leaf plum that's so famous in northern Arizona. It's got that purple foliage, but before that purple foliage on the tree comes out, it gets this real pretty pink flower to it, purple leaf plum, short vase-shaped, maybe 15 feet tall. It's a short tree, ornamental tree. There's a cherry that's also from the same Prunus family. It's the same. They're cousins of each other, and it has started to bloom here locally. So that's an indication. It's always that once that happens, you can't stop spring. It's coming no matter what. Of course, I mean, it's just next week. Spring is next week. That's it. So it's, we're here. Now, with that being said, for you new folks here, especially from you from the East Coast and the Midwest, where you're used to this weather gets this way and it stays this way and it slowly gets warmer and warmer and nicer, and then, oh, it's spring, it's here. That's not the way we do it in the mountains of Arizona. Here we're going, it's really nice, and now it's snowing. Now it's nice again. No, now it's frosty. Nope, now it's nice again. And we violently, slowly come up. So we're going to have these just stunning, beautiful days. We're going to go, I'm going to put the top down on the car, put my shorts on. I think I'm going to go out and garden today. And then within 10 days, it'll be a skip of snow on the ground or it's frosting out. So with that, be careful of what you're planting. You can plant, but you want to make sure you have, you're planting spring-loving things, things that love this kind of really nice day. And then it's frosty or snowy at night. There are some plants that actually thrive on that. I would think one whole series would be your fruiting plants. Blackberries and raspberries love that. Your apples and pears, they thrive. They need that. The varieties that do the best up here at this elevation need more cold nights before, or otherwise they'll erupt and bloom and they'll be at risk of blooming too early. And so the correct varieties need a lot of chilling hours. They need a lot of nights in a row of chilly nights before they'll actually be triggered to bloom. So those are your Macintosh apples, your Honeycrisp, your Fujis, and Red and Golden Delicious and Galas, and I could go on and on. Same with your pears, the Comice pear. That's my favorite. Anju pear. No, Anju's my favorite. No, Comice is favorite. No, I love pears. So I love pear leathers. I love juicing pears. I love pears right off the tree. My mouth is watering right now thinking of pears. That's another one that also needs very chilly nights to perform well. So it does best if you plant those now. They prefer being planted before they leaf out, before they bloom. This is when they're ideally or the best, you know, the perfect window for planting fruit trees. I could say the same thing about peaches and apricots and nectarines and plums, cherries. They're all the same way. We just got in this the most stunning walnuts, Carpathian walnuts. They just came in. They're the nicest walnuts I've ever seen. They're perfectly shaped in a 15-gallon bucket. I wish I knew how much they cost. Probably about $100. That's about what 15 gallons go for, maybe a little more. But they're just to see a nicely shaped nut tree is something that once you get a nice nut tree that's shaped well, it just grows bigger and bigger and more shapely, more luxurious as it grows. You get an ugly one, and it becomes more and more deformed, misshapen, and quite frankly, ugly tree. So trees are one of those things that if you're having the landscaper put your trees in for you, make sure you go to the nursery with them. Hand pick your trees. Don't just accept, I get two trees, bring them on, and 11 shrubs. Shrubs you can probably get away with. Just pick whatever, put them in the ground, and I'll hate them later. Well, I might like them later. I don't know. You probably won't be happy if you just leave it up to the landscaper. And then they throw in two trees. They're usually the dog-legged ones that were leftovers. They got a bargain price. And you really, the grade change between a nice tree and an ugly tree, it's not that much more money for a really nice, perfectly shaped tree. But you need to hand pick those and demand you get that from your landscaper. If he won't go with you or she won't go with you, go down beforehand, hand pick them, and then have them go pick them up for you so they can run it or take them home. A lot of you have pickup trucks, haul it home with you and go, I got the trees, put these two in, include it in the contract. But quite honestly, most homes, if you get a brand new house and they're including the front landscape package or whatever, really just get the irrigation in because that's hard. It's a lot of trenching and plumbing work, and get the rock slung so you keep the mud down. It just doesn't erode, and that's back-breaking, grueling work. If you've got those two things down and a few plants that you're not quite happy with, you can always add another plant or tree or shrub or rose or whatever, rosemary, later if you've got the irrigation there. So we could come out, plant for you. We just scooch the rock back, cut the fabric, kind of an X shape. We plant the plant, add the mulch, and get it all clean up. Then we'll find or backtrack the irrigation. It's just underneath the rock and the fabric. We'll backtrack, trying to figure that out. Add a spaghetti line to that half-inch tubing or distribution tubing. Add it to that tree or shrub, and away you go. It's very, very easy. Once you've got that skeletal structure out there in the yard of irrigation lines, here's one thing that people get confused with or get taken on, quite honestly, by their landscaper. They're going for price. They're doing all this work on the front of their landscape or back landscape, and they get a quote on irrigation. And they get a quote for, let's say, $1,000 irrigation throughout your entire yard. That seems right. But then they only put one irrigation line in. So you've got one distribution line, one controlled valve, one on-off switch. And really, you want to segment that irrigation system up. I teach a whole class on this, nothing but irrigation, but in a condensed version. Make sure you get enough flexibility within your irrigation cycles. So if you've got one system and it's controlling all of your trees and all of your shrubs and all of your flowers, and you want some containers around the back patio, and you want a vegetable garden out here, there you can't put all those on the same system. It just will never be. The trees will either be overwatered grossly, or your vegetables or roses or shrubs or something else will be grossly underwatered. So if you could, while they're putting that valve in, you've got a trench going through the backyard, you should put two valves in. Put two lines in the same trench. Usually they'll differentiate the two pipes by their color code. You know, purple stripe will be, those are my shrubs or my vegetable garden or my containers, and the plain black or the red stripe will be my shrubs and trees. They can easily differentiate the two going down that trench, but while you've opened the earth up, throw two lines. Throw a wire in for electric wiring, for lighting and that kind of stuff. It's so easy. Then backfill it all at once. So many times they take the shortcut. They're in, they're out while you're not even looking. They got one valve in, they get the price, take your check, and then you hate your system from that point forward. Or it's very expensive to add a second, third, or fourth line. Very easy while you're making that manifold or that multi-unit valve system underneath that box that's in the ground. trees should be.
You're listening
at least,
to local garden expert Ken Lane, also known as the Mountain Gardener. Ken can be found throughout the week at Waters Garden Center in Prescott. Listen each week as he answers timely garden questions unique to mountain landscapes.
Bigger rooted stuff on this line.
Hi, Waters here with this week's Plant of the Week and our show off for Scythias.
A new standout for Scythia with very large, very bright, solar yellow flowers that adorn the plant from head to toe.
Relax. This showy spring shrub is beautiful and requires no pruning or cleanup.
This show off is just days away from bloom and limited, so don't wait until these for Scythia are all gone at just $21.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
Where people who love show-off forsythia love to shop.
Bring on spring. I'm Lisa Waters Lane.
And I'm Ken Lane. We're excited to invite you to Waters Garden Center's 56th Spring Open House.
Talk to our farmers as they show off their best bloomers, elegant evergreens, and fragrant flowers.
Friday, it's free shamrocks with purchase of evergreen trees.
Saturday and Sunday, we have free garden classes, giveaways, and hot dogs on the grill.
And we're both here with expert advice. Join the fun at Waters Spring Open House all weekend long, March 16 through 18.
See you there.
You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
And we are in the studio with Lisa Waters Lane. She comes each week with your garden questions. Just what's going on in your neighbor's yard? Sometimes you can learn that because it's not just hitting your yard, it's hitting your neighborhood or your town. When aphids outbreak, they're outbreaking everywhere. When this week the flowering cherries, the native cherries are blooming, they're blooming all over the central Highland area. It's kind of the announcement of spring. And so I think there's some value in hearing what other people are asking or wanting answers to. And so Lisa brings those to you. Welcome into the studio, Lisa.
Thank you.
We've got, you want to make the announcement of what exciting thing is happening in the Lane Casa this week with the baby
shower
thing?
Yes. So tomorrow we're headed off to, well, Sunday, depending on when you hear the show, we're headed off to a baby shower for our son and daughter-in-law's first little girl in the family. We have two grandsons, and now we're expecting a girl in June.
I don't know how we're going to get all those gift bags in the back of the SUV. You've just been going crazy, going, little girls are so cute. This is going to be so fun.
Boy stuff is cute, but the little girl stuff is just adorable. It has little bunnies on it. It's just cute.
I think you're being sexist. I think you're being discriminatory. I think you're thinking boys are like Batman action figures and little girls like to dress up like, how do you feel about
that? For the most part. That's kind of the way it is.
It sort of is, isn't it?
No. I love my grandsons. They are a hoot. You got to love little boys because they're just not afraid to be out there.
That's right.
Be in stuff, make a mess, enjoy life. I mean, I appreciate that.
Now, we had twins. We have four kids and our two youngest kids. So we had one boy, one girl, a 7 and a 5-year-old. Tell me if I got this wrong. They fit in this little sexy sedan. It's just zipping around. The house was the perfect size, under 2,000 square feet, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. It was like the perfect everything. We thought, that's it. And then a business trip to Vegas gone awry.
Well, we don't need to give all the details.
Okay. Never mind. I take that back. We'll come back with the twins. And so all of a sudden your house doesn't fit. You need a bigger, minivan. You need nothing fits.
That's true.
And so, but with our girls, identical twin girls, we always allowed them to dress, have different hairstyles. They could be different. They could be personal. Their own unique personality could shine through.
That's true.
I thought that was so, but I can remember to this day going to, I think, Target or someplace, buying the same outfit, but in different colors.
Yeah.
They're twins, but we're not going to force them to be Bobsy twins right through forever. So yeah. I think that's valuable to have a personality. Make it your own.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, they definitely have their own personality.
Yeah. I think we may have done too good a job. I don't know. But anyway, this is garden questions. What do we got this week that pertains to the landscape, which it's in full swing now?
You bet. Well, our first question is from Myra in Prescott Valley. It's been a while since she has grown roses, but now she's moved to PV. She has roses. She has pruned them back. Good. In the past, she used to spray them with the lime sulfur spray, which they have taken off the market since. And she wants to know, what should she spray with roses now after she's pruned them to clean them up?
Sure. No, you should spray them, especially if you've had issues in the past, aphids. You've had issues with leaf spot or mildew, or there are some things. Roses are high in sugar. That's what brings the fragrance out, that huge flower. It takes a lot of photosynthesis or carbohydrates to make all that. And so things like to eat them every once in a while. So some roses are worse than others. So if you're not sure, you'll prune them up in the month of March. That's the first thing. Fertilize them in the month of March. That's the next thing. And then when you're all done, you spray them with, we may have differing opinions. What's your thought on that? What do you think they should spray with?
I think I would probably use the dormant oil, the horticultural oil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. I would say prune off as many of the leaves as you can. And then you spray it with an oil. And that'll take care of aphids, mm-hmm. thrip, eggs that were laid last fall and winter. That are staying there waiting to hatch and come out. It kills them. So it cleans everything up. Mm-hmm. So you're starting at ground zero with perfectly clean environment. The last little bit, I would say that leaf litter that gathers up around the canes or over that grafted area, clean that up, because that's where a lot of that stuff harbors or stays mm-hmm. or camps out. I've actually pulled back that rose leaf litter at the base and found colonies, thousands of aphids sitting there waiting for the day to get warm, crawl back up. You don't know that until you pull that back and rake it up. And then I would hose that down really well. Mm-hmm. So that's one that's probably the best advice I could give. The food, generally we say use the all-purpose plant food, the one that we make locally. It's, mm-hmm. it's our recipe that works here. The cottonseed meal on that is exceptional. Just really makes things bloom and makes the colors pop and the fragrance come out. If you've had tremendous problems with aphids, I'm almost nervous to say this because we're just anti-chemical everything. They do make a rose food with systemic. I think Bonide makes the safest one. It's one we have. You could sprinkle that out. It is a chemical. It's a petroleum-based product with a systemic bug killer added to it. The plant will absorb it and taint the sap and the bud so that the aphids and thrip won't or can't get into it as easily. I'm nervous saying that over the airwaves just because some people go crazy with all these chemicals and they almost do more damage than good. If you haven't had any insect issues, don't use the rosewood with systemic. Stick with the natural products, the water's all-purpose mm-hmm. plant food. Far safer and longer lived. It actually works, brings more color out. But the rosewood with systemic could actually keep some bugs away if you've had issues in the past. Yeah. That's kind of where I'd leave it.
Because there truly are some roses, like the white roses, the lighter color roses, seem to have more problem with thrip than others. And the Bonide will help with the thrip?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely will help cut back the numbers. I noticed the lavenders and blues, those type of roses, the hybrid tea, lavendery looking colors or purpley colors. They're just so sweet and so fragrant. They're also some of the most fragrant roses. I think that's part of it. They're throwing off the scent. The bugs go, I just can't resist. I must go eat that rose. So that's where you might use the rose food with systemic.
Yeah. Specialized.
Yep.
Okay. Next question is from Bill in Prescott. He has a hillside that he wants erosion control, plant for erosion control. He's looked at the Calgary carpet junipers, and he's looked at some of the low-growing cotoneasters. Which do you feel would be best for erosion control, low maintenance, and low water?
So there's several choices. Now, the common ones, and frequently we'll blend the Coral Beauty cotoneaster or Eichholt cotoneaster, these low-growing creeping cotoneasters. We'll blend those with the creeping junipers. Just, you can get the same, too much of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Looks all, you know, just the same monotone color. To blend those up and go with block. So generally when you're doing a big hillside, you'll plant in odd numbers, threes and fives, sixes, seven, not sixes, sevens and nines. You plant in big.
And how's then, that college education working for you?
It's real good. I'm smart. Anyway, I'm sure we insulted someone. And then don't plant in straight lines going across that hill. Now, I'm not sure what the grade is. That's where an iPad could really help bring that in with a quick measurement. We could help you space things out correctly. Mm-hmm. But you want to plant in triangular patterns. So it looks like God just sprinkled this hillside with junipers and cotone asters. Mm-hmm. And so it looks more natural when you get done. It also makes it easier to put the drip system up and down or sideways on that hill. I would really encourage you for steep erosion issues. Look at the vines. Mm-hmm. Virginia creeper grows wild here. Honeysuckle naturalizes so easy, and it's firewise. You've got trumpet vine, which are these great big yellow or red flowers that just hummingbirds love. They live for. But vines, you can encourage those to not grow up stuff, but to grow out over that landscape. It's another very good choice for erosion control. We've got a list here at the Garden Center. They come in, we'll give you the grand tour on that one. So Ken and Lisa Lane and the Mountain Gardeners will be right back. Don't you change that dial.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona with local garden expert and the Mountain Gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
In a new place, it's difficult to know who to trust, how to get help at the house, and which nursery will simply do what they say they'll do.
At Waters Garden Center, we're here to help, in the landscape at least.
Our team of plant ambassadors know your neighborhood, the plants that add color, increase privacy, and add fragrance and beauty.
And we can show you exactly how to plant locally, or we have teams to do all the work for you.
We are Ken and Lisa Lane, and we guarantee our plants will live up to every promise here at Waters Garden Center.
You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
So this question came in, Ken, when should I prune my roses? From a good friend, a great rosarian. He just forgot. He said, do I wait till spring? That's next week. Or can I do it now? The answer to that is very easy. Roses are the last thing you prune in the yard, the spring bloomers, usually the month of March. Anytime. It doesn't matter. There is no exact day for pruning that is best. Pruning is mainly about the prunor, you, the gardener. What's comfortable for you? When do you have the time to do it? So I just finished my Cecil Bruner roses. These are gigantic, magnificent climbing roses or big grandiflora type of roses. They were 10 feet tall and equally as wide, big swooping branches. They're used to divide the property lines between my neighbor and I. They're beautiful, and we love them, both of us. I prune them up. I keep them in check. Otherwise, they take over. And so I've taken the last 3 weeks to prune these three bushes, one bush per week. I did them all at once. The reason I didn't do them all at once, I had the time. I didn't have the trash space. So I found that in our house, for a husband and wife, we don't generate that much trash. So over half of that can in the city of Prescott was open. And so I thought, oh, that's just about the right amount for cut this down, take those, bend them, break them, put them in the trash can. And you can get about one of the bushes in each trash can. That's what I've been doing for the last 3 weeks. I mean, when I get done last week, the can was overflowing. You could barely, if it was windy at all, the top would just flop right open going, I have nothing but rose branches. But when I got done, the structure, you can see through it, I'll have less disease, less pack rats. I can fertilize easier. I can maintain them easier. And they never quite get out of hand. Every year I prune them back pretty hard. Otherwise, you're going to get a maintenance bill. You're going to have your maintenance guy come in going, oh, this is going to take about 3 days to prune it, prune all this stuff, clean your yard up. That'll be about $3,000. Well, I don't want a $3,000 bill. I want free. And if I take my time and put a little bit in the trash can each time and I keep up with this rose, if I let that Cecil Bruner rose or a big Lincoln rose or a big climbing rose or a butterfly bush or red-tipped photinia, any of these fast-growing plants, if I let them go for several years in a row and I don't keep up on the annual pruning, you get these huge expenses. They're just difficult, and they take years to recover from butchering this plant. If you can give it a decent cut, clean up every spring, you'll find you never have to figure out how to get back to baseline. You're just naturally keeping up on this plant, and your plant is healthier. They're happier. Plants like to be pruned on because that keeps the air flowing through them. They don't have leaf spot as easy. Birds can't get in there and peck away at the bark. The rats can't come down and scrape the bark off. The things can't roost in there that shouldn't be there. The javelina aren't going to burrow under and just make a nest down there and sleep in your backyard underneath your big red-tipped photinias. So it's good to keep up with them if it has gotten away from you, or if you actually got into a situation where you bought a house, the folks got a little older and they couldn't keep up like they used to, and they didn't hire that service out, and it's just overgrown. Come talk to us. We can show you how to clean them up. And secondly, if you just, there's some products that they're just too big for you. We've got some names of preferred or contractors. They don't pay us to be on this list. It's just customers have told us they like them. So we're going, oh, that's good enough. Good reference. Or we see they're shopping regularly here at the garden center, and they seem to bring their customers with them. They seem to be engaged, or they know a few things about plants. Those are all the ways that we curate our contractor referral list. It's not that they pay us to get on. It's not that we ask them if we can put them on. It's kind of organically come together. So that's one. If you need a big cleanup, big trees, I would say Johnny's Tree Service. They've got the arborist side of things, and also they've got another division that the other brother kind of runs. These are all family companies that runs the other side that does landscaping. So if you need more rock slung, that'd be Johnny's Landscape Service. If you've got a big fruit tree project, or the roses are just way too big, or you need to take down a tree that's kind of the limbs have died, or that willow tree is just leaning dangerously out over your roof line, that'd be Johnny's Tree Service piece. So that's kind of how, and there's different folks. We've got bird catchers, bee people, all kinds of folks. Big tree jobs, small garden jobs, all on the Waters preferred contractor list. Lisa Waters Lang comes in the studio to give her take on her style of gardening from her unique perspective right after this.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona, with local garden expert and the Mountain Gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Growing up in Prescott, we knew spring was here when my grandmother's lilacs bloomed. I'm Lisa Waters Lane, and my grandma would be thrilled with the new Bloomerang Pink Perfume Lilacs at Waters Garden Center. New pink blooms fill the landscape with fragrance of grandma over and over again in the garden. Mine bloomed 3 times last year, making spring last well into fall, all for under $25. Lilacs like grandma used to grow, and better. Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
And we are back with Lisa Waters Lane in the hot seat. She comes each week and shares her thoughts, her opinions. It totally goes anywhere. Generally, we get some garden information into the segment. So, Lisa.
Sometimes it's gardening, sometimes it's travel, family.
Kind of what's up, top of mind kind of stuff. Right. Of course, garden center owners in the peak of spring plants are the top of mind because we're unloading truckload after truckload of plants.
Right.
And so it's getting exciting.
It is.
For plant nerds.
We have been unloading numerous trucks getting ready for our spring open house, which is March 17th and 18th, yeah. Which is always a fun time. We do some hot dogs. We have the different growers and vendors around, people who've actually grown these plants, people who supply some of our hard good products. So it's just a fun time. If you're kind of a garden nerd or you think you want to be a gardener, come out.
People don't realize that soil, soil is not dirt. Right. There's science and recipes, and we tweak and play. It's kind of like baking the perfect cookie or the best cupcake or having the best steak or the – there's an art to it. And soil is not just soil. And so we've been perfecting our soils for, I don't know, for 15 years. And so now we've got the person that puts our soils together. She's going to be here all weekend, or at least Saturday – showing people potting soils, the different types of soils and what you use them for and why they're specialized and why they're made for here.
Yeah.
And so we've partnered with them to help us come up with these recipes, and they bag it and package it and help us design the labels and make sure we register it if it needs to be registered. Our fertilizer comes from them.
Yes.
They've helped us. Had a buddy in Tucson. He's agriculture extraordinaire. Really smart. I said, "Hey, Tom, can I take that recipe?" He goes, "Yeah." And then we've tweaked it with the help of GrowWell out of Casa Grande to help us admit that they're here all weekend. So you can see that spring open house. You can talk right to the people. Uh-huh. If you're a plant nerd, you'll eat it up. So anyway. Yeah.
It's fun. It's a good time. If you've got a few hours on the 17th or 18th, come check it out. It'll be fun.
So this is about you, though.
Oh.
Not about the garden center or your team. Or it's about,
is that separable?
No, it is one of the small business ownership. After this, I go clean a toilet.
Yeah. So,
we've got the light bulbs out. We're unloading a semi. I've got to change the oil in the truck. Yeah. That's kind of small
Jack
business ownership.
Yeah. So like you said, we've been unloading a lot of trucks getting ready. And we have some beautiful spring blooming perennials that are terrific to plant right now, put into those perennial beds to kind of brighten things up, give it some color. So definitely got some nice things. We got some columbine that are striking.
Are they blooming yet?
Yes.
Columbine that's in bloom. Ooh, that's a sign that spring is here when that crop comes off. Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
So columbines, we have the red and white. There's a blue and white, and there's a yellow and white one. Mix them up or put a block of color in. Just terrific. They do like a little bit of a shadier perennial, or what am I trying to say? Light that's...
Filtered sun or what?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out where you're going with this. Brain fart. We got this. So it's a shade to part day sun. I know they'll take full sun according to the label.
Yeah.
I notice they bloom longer when you got some filtered shade, especially as we get hot into May, June, July. They'll really perform better in a more filtered sun than direct, hot, blistering, up against a wall sun.
I agree. Thank you for your help on that. I was eating cookies beforehand, and I think I'm having a sugar issue. Candy tuft, Iberis, is a white, low-growing white flower. So pretty. Wonderful for the borders of the perennial beds or just to pop in. Doesn't get overly huge, not going to overtake, but it gives you that pop of white, which helps other colors show off better.
You know, I like the white when you've got really nice glazed pots. So you just brought two ginormous, I could barely get them to the ground, red pots home to be on either side of the garage. Sometimes those light colors accent that color. It shows off all the other colors of your house or of your art or of your containers. I don't think we appreciate white as much as we do the reds, purples, and some of the darker colors, which are pretty up close. But from a distance, as you're driving into your driveway, sometimes that bright red or aqua or jade greens with that white accent is really stunning.
I agree. We also have wallflower or erysium, which is the other name for it. We have one that is called winter sun yellow. They've kind of hybridized some of these. So this one is a longer blooming, and it doesn't get as rangy as some of the other wallflowers sometimes can tend to get. But beautiful yellow, just a pop of yellow out there, and a nice compact perennial for in those beds.
You should mention what a perennial is for folks. That's like the number one question we get.
That's true.
Perennial like five times already, but perennial and permanent.
Yes.
Both start with P. That's the way I remember it, at least.
That's good.
Annual is just a blooms for the year and then it's done. It dies in the winter, typically. So that's the difference. So perennials are those things, are the anchors. And what I appreciate about your container gardens, you use perennials as the anchor, as the foundational plant. Then you accessorize towards the front edge with a lot of the – you're blending annuals and perennials in the same gardens.
Right.
So you don't have to replant everything every year. You're replanting a piece of each garden each year. That's a brilliant way to design.
Saves a lot of time, a lot of work. It's just easier. So definitely a good thing to do. Creeping phlox is another one that's often overlooked, but nice, low-growing. It kind of comes in pinks and purples and lavenders. Gorgeous when it's blooming in the spring. It's absolutely gorgeous. And very animal resistant for people who are just struggling with those bunnies and javelinas. Excuse me. It's a great one for that.
I think that phlox should be planted more often because it naturalizes so well. It reseeds so well. The animals don't eat it, and it's firewise. Mm-hmm. And it's perennial. Comes back every year and just grows, and the bunch becomes a larger bunch, and then it becomes a mound, and then it just creeps. It's just a beautiful little perennial wildflower for the mountains of Arizona.
Actually pretty drought hardy, too.
Very drought hardy, I would say so.
Yeah. Hellebores.
Say it again.
I know. I love saying hellebores. Kind of a, more of a shade plant, but an evergreen shade plant that blooms early in the spring has absolutely beautiful blooms on it that you just wouldn't expect from a plant that's called a hellebore.
Linton Rose is
Linton Rose is the other name. There's Sparkling Diamond, Cherry Blossom, Blue Diamond, and then there's one called Peppermint Ice.
Oh, really?
So very, very pretty. I'm thinking about putting some in by our ivy that we have by the front door.
Sure, yeah,
good idea. Just to try them, because I really haven't tried them much.
True. That one's evergreen, too, right?
Yes.
It's got evergreen foliage. Mm-hmm. Then it's got a kind of a waxy leaf, and I'm pretty sure that one's also animal resistive.
I think it would be proof. Just from the texture of the leaf. I don't think there's a lot of
critters. I'll read up on the tag on that. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing that. The hellebores, that's how you're going to see it in Fine Garden Magazine. That's the name. Hellebores, why they're so great for winter blooming. But really, it's the Linton Rose. It actually looks more like a rose
kind of
flower
Very
than
pretty.
It does whatever else you're thinking of.
That is true. The Mediterranean Heath is another one. Talk about long-lasting blooms. That heath, I think it stays in bloom forever, it seems like.
Seems like it,
Comes in white and pink, and then also a really dark, dark pink. They call it red, but it's pink. And the texture there, again, once the blooms are gone later as we move into summer, it has a very ferny, almost leaf structure to it. Very pretty. So even if you left it in your pots or in your perennial beds, it's still going to look attractive.
Super versatile. Mm-hmm. The heaths and heathers are meadow type of high altitude meadow flowers. Mm-hmm. So this is like a shrub, mini shrub that grows maybe, I don't know, a foot high, something like that, maturity. We've grown it in Skull Valley out in full sun, Prescott Valley, in a container in our home out there, full sun on the patio to shade. And so it's very versatile, but evergreen with this fern. Ferns struggle here because of the dryness, but not heaths and heathers. It's like a bulletproof plant. It starts blooming or setting the bud in the fall. The buds look like they're flowering, but they aren't. They're just huge flower buds.
Right.
It finally opens the very late winter, very early spring, and then just keeps doing that for a long time. It's a great plant. The perennials are here. They're starting to show up. It's time that you can plant some of those things. Mm-hmm. Even though the weather may be inclement every once in a while, it's still these plants you just mentioned would love everything about spring planting at Waters Garden Center. Be right back with more of the Mountain Gardeners.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona with local garden expert and the mountain gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Hi, Waters here with this week's Plant of the Week and our show-off for Scythias.
A new standout for Scythia with very large, very bright, solar yellow flowers that adorn the plant from head to toe.
Relax! This showy spring shrub is beautiful and requires no pruning or cleanup.
This show-off is just days away from bloom and limited, so don't wait until these for Scythia are all gone at just $21.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
Where people who love show-off for Scythia love to shop.
So now the trees that we're going to have. So no one does trees really well in the Central Highlands. This is Sedona to really Kingman, Payson to Prescott, and everything in between, north of Anthem to Williams. No one does trees. I mean, just dedicates room to trees because they're expensive. They're big, and it takes some expertise to pick those, grow those, and so they're complicated. So we thought, oh, that's something a small independent garden center could focus on and really dominate the market. So we had like 1,000 trees show up. And that's our thing. From fruit trees, a whole section is probably a quarter acre, nothing but fruiting plants, to another quarter acre of nothing but shade and ornamental plants. And there's even more evergreen trees like spruce and pine and fir. We've even got a section of nothing but privacy plants. So here are the big evergreen things you plant to not have to see your neighbor anymore. We'll make them disappear this season. That's kind of our specialty. This year, there's a weakness in vines. No one does vines really well because vines typically grow too fast for retailers. They take more maintenance. So you have to nip and tuck and take, they have to nurture them. Most garden centers aren't plant people. They're just retailers. Get them in, get them out. They're here for more than a few days. They overgrow and they're no good and they're stressed out and you don't want to buy those. Well, vines, that's something we can dominate on. It's specialized. But in the mountains, there's enough erosion. There's enough blank walls. What came to mind, a friend of mine bought a brand new house. The backyard is rock with cinder block walls about 5 feet high. You can just see over them to all the neighbors. I'm going, and then it's sterile cinder block. I thought I was in the Eastern Russian block or something. It just stark. And I'm going, you really need some tall shrubs or some vines. You need some vines. Vines. No one does vines well in this Central Highland area. So this year we are going to absolutely dominate. We're going to have a vine section from grapes and blackberries and raspberries to Virginia creeper and Boston ivy and wisterias. And it's going to mesmerize the number and assortments and sizes and varieties of vines that will grow in the mountains of Arizona. Because no one, that's something a small independent can really do and do it well, like no other box store ever dreamed of. They wouldn't want to. And so we can come out and be the experts in that. And that's kind of how we do things. Tomatoes. No one's got more tomato varieties, organic, non-GMO vegetables in the area than we do. That's kind of our thing because it takes a gardener to really have that selection that grows here. So there's certain things that do well. Edible plants are one of those. So fruiting trees is another one. Fruiting vines. And I would go so far as some of the shrubs like blueberries. We just had a whole load of blueberries, strawberries. What other edible plants? There's bunches of them. Here's the lowdown on edibles. If you want something to fruit, and it may not be that you want to eat it. Let's say like the lower grapes on my property, I have a blackberry down there for, or just for the birds. I leave them. I purposely don't pick them. So I attract more birds into my yard because we love butterflies and birds. That's kind of one of our things. And so I don't mind them having those. Just leave these up here for me. And so I've got some that are planted just for me and some just for them. And we share pretty well in that regard. This is the time you want to put edible things in the ground because the blackberries are dormant. They're starting to leaf out. You see some leaves, raspberries, some leaves. Here's the thing about blackberries and raspberries. Typically, you only need one to really produce well. They don't need pollinators, but there are different varieties or colors or flavors of fruit. So your raspberries, they actually make a black raspberry. There's a gold raspberry. There's a red raspberry that you're traditionally used to.
Oh, that gold one is so good. Black raspberries, in my world, it's just a blackberry, not a raspberry. Sorry. Black raspberry just reminds me of a blackberry too much. If I wanted it to be black, I would have blackberries. They are a different flavor and texture. But I also like the varieties that are thornless or less thorny. There's a series of them, like Canberry raspberries. It's less thorny, so you can get in there and pick the fruits, not be look like you've been in a cat fight. You can go, what's the other one? Black satin blackberry. Tremendous producer locally, at least in my gardens. Huge black blackberry. I mean, magnificent. You can get bushels of them. I'll go out and pick a whole basket full of them and have them for dinner and breakfast and more. They just produce really well and no thorns on that. It's silky smooth, thus black satin, blackberry that has satin bark on it. Tremendous producer here. I prefer that one. Now, some of the old timers, your grandparents, they only dreamed of that particular plant. It wasn't available. It's a fairly new introduction. But you can have a thornless raspberry and a thornless blackberry. Blueberries, on the other hand, we do grow blueberries. Now, you Midwestern folks, you know that Minnesota, Wisconsin's, Illinois, Indiana's, you're famous for your blueberries. What I find here, I've tried growing that in the ground several times, and the ground is just so alkaline. The bush turns yellow on me, and no matter how I try to change the chemistry to more acidic, it just gets yellow on me. I find I have the best luck with my blueberries when I grow them in a container with potting soil. The native soil that we have in the mountains with our alkaline water is just, it makes the blueberries struggle. They'll produce, but the berries are smaller. There's less of them. It's off-colored. But if you put them in a good potting soil, like our water's potting soil, I always put fresh potting soil in my containers every year. I want to have some freshness because that peat moss, which is the main ingredient in a good potting soil, is very acidic, but it also gets used up by the plants each year. So you want to add some freshness or the soil will become used or sterile or just not as vigorous. And so if you've planted in that soil several times, even if you try to pull the roots out and stuff, still you'll notice it's just not the same as last year. I'm doing all the same stuff, but it's just not producing like it did last year. That's because the soil was used up. The vigor, the vitality within that soil, you need to add some freshness. And so our water's potting soil, I made that recipe, probably 15, maybe 20 years ago, a long time ago, for the mountains, where it holds just enough moisture yet breathes, has just enough peat moss to make it, to correct that pH that makes it more acidic, and your blueberries will go nuts in that soil. So take a piece of your raised bed or container or something where you can artificially bring in an additional amount of peat moss-based soil additives, and you'll find your blueberries do exceptionally well. The other ones are the fruit trees. We do grow apples and pears. If I were to rate them as far as best production, highest performers, most consistent fruiting, I would say the pears and the apples are the most consistent. Every year you can count on them to produce fruit. That's it. The next one would be probably peaches, no, probably cherries. Cherries are the next most consistent producer. Then it would be peaches. Then it'd be plums. And then it would be nectarines and apricots. I'd go in that order. So if you're just starting out, I'm only allowed one tree, I would get an apple or a pear. If you get an orchard and you want, you know, six trees, I do it in that order. Plant mainly one or two apples, pears, then a peach, then a cherry, then an apricot, nectarine, and you'll find you do well. We also do grow, though, figs. I've got a fig in a container. It's beautiful. Big jade green pot. I've planted a fig, and I want it to remind me of Mediterranean garden. So I put creeping thyme over the pot. So it creeps out over the edge of the pot. It keeps the ants out of my figs, because figs, they're like every ant in the area will love to eat figs, just like you do. So that thyme repels the ants, and then it's also pretty. It just looks good together, good companion plants. And lastly, I would say pomegranates. There are some new introductions. You'd think of that as a desert plant,
But there are some varieties that will do very well in the mountains of Arizona. So pomegranates down to walnuts, almonds, apples, pears, nectarines, cherries, peaches, and I forgot one, apricots. There you go. Fruiting plants in the mountains of Arizona. All good to be planted right now.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona with local garden expert and the mountain gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Let's talk poop.
Hey, I'm Tommy at Waters Garden Center. Ken and Lisa are out right now, so I snuck in to remind you that it's time to add some manure to your garden. It's been a wet winter, and your soil is, well, pooped. Waters Barnyard Manure adds nutrients to get your garden growing. It's organic and odorless, so we really can say our poop don't stink. Buy 6 bags or more. They're only $5.99. Now that's a load of crap.
Tommy, what's going on?
Oh, poop, gotta go. Natural, safe, odorless, and organic at Waters Garden Center.
You know, I had mentioned closing that last segment. You can also plant figs and pomegranates right now. Of course, I'm trying to watch the clock and meet a certain deadline that, you know, the clock says, end now, go to commercial. So I may have lost my head. No, you don't really want to plant figs and pomegranates right now. Yes, all the trees, apples, pears, cherries, nectarines, apricots, plums, and peaches. I'm going down the tree rack, tree lines, going, I'm just make sure I get them all. I'm sure there might be even others. You can plant all those now, and the selection is tremendous. The figs and pomegranates, they prefer to be planted when the soil is a touch warmer. So in another month, you'll have a good selection. For you Midwest folks, you were taught years ago, fall is the best time to plant. And that is true. Fall is the best time, but it's not the best selection. Right now, I find spring is actually the best time to plant. If you can get it in before they leaf and flower, it's ideal. Because yes, fall is better, but you don't have the same choices. There's not as many trees to pick from. Right now, the garden centers have just been stocked full of so many varieties. They're overflowing. They even have backup. They've got more trucks coming. So your selection is by far better right now. I would say if you can get them in now through the end of April, mid-April, when do trees wake up? They're starting now, would be ideal. We do plant year-round. So in May, my apple trees will actually have little apples on them. You can still plant then because we're mild. We just don't get hot like the deserts, and we don't get cold like the very high ridge lines of, let's say, the White Mountains. Your Flagstaff, you guys shut down a little bit some years, not this year, but most years you're praying for snow and that, you know, ski slopes to be opened. But the rest of us at below 6,500 foot level, we plant year round because it's so mild. And that's why we live here. A quick tip when you're planting, you're always going to need three things whenever you plant a tree, a shrub, or a vine. Three things. You're going to need mulch, a food, and a rooting transplant shock kind of liquid. So you're going to dig your hole the same depth as that plant. Let's say it's a blueberry. It's in a 5-gallon bucket. Let's say it's got about a 14-inch depth root, or a tree, a 15-gallon tree, about an 18-inch depth root. You only dig the hole as deep as that root, as that bucket, but you go wide. Roots go sideways. They do not go down. So you're digging three times the width of the bucket, but the same depth. That's a real game changer for you. It's so much easier to dig a shallow wide hole than a deep hole. That native soil that's there, you're gonna have to reuse that. Plants got to get used to it. So we'll filter out all the yuck, the rocks, the debris, the roots, and that kind of screen that out. There's nothing that helps it. Anything bigger than a golf ball is not going to help you. It's going to hinder you. So you screen that. You blend about 1/4 mulch or compost to 3/4 native soil, or 1 scoop of mulch every 3 scoops of native soil. And you blend all that together and you backfill around that root ball and pack it tight so that plant will stay up straight as an arrow. You'll sprinkle some all-purpose plant food. There's a 7-4-4 food that You sprinkle on top of the soil and you water it in when you're all done with a mixture of water and root and grow. It's a liquid rooting hormone. So as you manipulate this plant, you're going to break some roots and just it goes into shock. So you put this root and grow around it and it just stimulates the plant to want to send more roots out. So whenever you plant, you need three things. You're going to need a bag of mulch. You're going to need some root and grow or all-purpose plant food. And you'll need root and grow, liquid transplant shock, just for transplant shock. And that's how you plant anything all the time, every time in the yard in the mountains of Arizona. Throughout the week, Lisa and I camp out here at Waters Garden Center. We love talking to gardening friends, especially as we go into the spring season. Thanks for tuning in.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona with local garden expert and the Mountain Gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Bring on spring. I'm Lisa Waters Lane.
And I'm Ken Lane. We're excited to invite you to Waters Garden Center's 56th Spring Open House.
Talk to our farmers as they show off their best bloomers, elegant evergreens, and fragrant flowers.
Friday, it's free shamrocks with purchase of evergreen trees.
Saturday and Sunday, we have free garden classes, giveaways, and hot dogs on the grill.
And we're both here with expert advice. Join the fun at Waters Spring Open House all weekend long, March 16 through 18.
See you there.
Ouch! Aw, man, another rock! Hi, I'm Rusty. You know, the shovel you're destroying trying to dig that hole? Sure, I get it. You got these beautiful plants at Waters Garden Center. Waters asked if they could plant them for you, but no. You had to do it yourself, even though they would plant, deliver, and guarantee your plants for 2 years. I hope I don't end up like that old pickaxe. Ouch! Prevent yard tool abuse. Waters Garden Center. They plant, deliver, and guarantee.
You've been listening to local garden expert Ken Lane, the owner of Waters Garden Center in Prescott. Join him each week as he answers timely garden questions unique to the area. He can be found throughout the week at Waters Garden Center, located in Prescott at 1815 Iron Springs Road. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Gardener.